and this is Mae Bressel. Broadcast number 635. It's February the 6th, 1984. A year ago this evening, and a year goes fast, we were talking about Alexander Haig, who was just knighted. He was made a Knight of Malta by the Vatican, and a friend who's now World Watcher, who was, sent a list of the new Knights of Malta. I'll share that with you. I haven't put that on the air yet. I appreciate that. He went to St. Patrick's and got a list of the new Knights of Malta. And I was talking about the various agents in our United States government that work with Alexander Haig and with the Vatican, linking them to particular violences, political assassinations, and scandals of the past year. Also, a year ago tonight, there was a tug of war between Chase Manhattan and London. The High Court in London was telling Chase Manhattan to ignore subpoenas for information on Mark Rich. He's the fellow that owns 50% of 20th Century Fox and Pebble Beach up here, the international oil dealing firm that made a tremendous profit and went off with about $100 million to Swiss banks. It's a year later, and Mark Rich is living in Spain. He does not account for the money that he took out of this country. That happened in Italy with the scandal was going on just a year ago, the gas scandal of $86 million, a commission that went down from Saudi Arabia to Licio Gelli to Nazis down in Argentina, and it was that act that caused the law last week that I mentioned that the priests will not be immune from arrest in Italy. They're shifting the Vatican out of the Italian government. The Vatican had a big part and does have of draining cash from the Italian people and from the church itself to the Nazi parties. Last year I had an article and mentioned John DeLorean, who had been arrested. Will John DeLorean deliver Hollywood? He threatened an inquisition. John DeLorean delivered, he's very good delivering people, and he certainly delivered Larry Flint for the intelligence and got Larry Flint involved. Gordon Novell from the Defense Department and the CIA was traveling between Jack Anderson and John DeLorean in New Jersey and gave these tapes to Larry Flint. Of course, you can't give them to people who don't want them. He got himself suckered into this for his moment of notoriety or whatever. He got his finger into the DeLorean story, and touching DeLorean is like tar baby. The rabbit that touches the tar baby, it gets stuck in the tar. Nobody touches DeLorean and comes out really clean. Gordon Novell was the one who supplied these tapes. That was in The Rebel, a picture of Novell with Larry Flint. Now it's a year later, and Larry was in court last week in Los Angeles. I'll do more on that in a few minutes or in the second half of this program this evening. And he was crying in court, and he said that the house, the fellow in charge of security at his home, and Gordon Novell and two other people raped his 14-year-old daughter. You can't go back. He said, what about Novell? I said, stay away from him. That's when Larry was sane and wasn't going down this terrible situation that came down to him. He didn't, DeLorean did deliver Larry Flint, and he and his co-partner did this to five or six other people, totally bankrupt them and ruined their lives, and maybe other people we don't know about. He hasn't yet delivered Hollywood, but he certainly delivered Flint. Also last year I was talking about Klaus Barbie and his links to Henry Kissinger, and why, from Oberammergau, Kissinger is so important, how he ties into Klaus Barbie in Bolivia and with the cocaine traffic and with the World Nazi Organization afterwards. That was just a year ago tonight, a year ago last night. Now, I got an article, the same person who attended the knighting of Malta this week. It's from the New Republic, February the 6th, 1984. There's a list of people from the W.R. Grace and Company who are Knights of Malta. But the article I got was from the New Republic, from Republic Magazine, February the 6th, 1984. This is the New Republic. You can get it at the library. And it's titled Watergate on the Rhine, Der Scandal. And there are two elements there, one with the head of NATO who was removed, Mr. Kiesling. But the interesting part was that they touched on the Flick affair, and I've mentioned it a few times, but not enough. The Frederick Flick organization that works along with J. Peter Grace, and Mr. Flick is on the board of J. Peter Grace, and Dr. Frederick Carl Flick was, and his father were people that were behind the funding of Adolf Hitler and the utilizing of the wages from slave labor and concentration camps, and were very much a part of the propaganda machine of Adolf Hitler. And the Republic article, the New Republic, has a story about the Flick affair and the $300 million of tax exemption that was given to the Flicks, and then they in turn poured it into W.R. Grace and Company in this United States. But one of the interesting things out of this article was it said the list of names involved with the Flick Company that's coming out in Germany is a who's who of German politics. And it's a chairman, it's a short step from Chairman Flick to Eberhard von Brauchwitz, Brauchitsch, chairman of Flick. And they found out in the files that he's the nephew of Hitler's commander-in-chief. So that the Flicks and J. Peter Grace and the Knights of Malta, goodness knows what else is in their hidden files, but they're getting closer to be Hitler's commander-in-chief, to be the nephew, and to be working with these people. And it was Mr. Grace that was put on the commission to look into ways to save money in this country for Ronald Reagan. Fancy title for his commission, but the point is that we're now getting to the people that actually ran Nazi Germany, right down to Otto Ambrose, the chemist with the gas, or John Paul II, who worked at Auschwitz, for IG Farben. The Flick story over in Germany is bringing out higher Nazis than are believable, and on the board of the Grace Company, I was mailed a list of some of the people, one Dr. Frederick Carl Flick. And of course, I've mentioned before that Roger Millikan, who is on the board of the W.R. Grace & Company, was the man who put John Reese onto Western Goals with Larry McDonald, that incorporated the Nazi connections, the Galen connections from Germany, right to the Los Angeles Police Department. And I have a lot more news for you on the LAPD. I did some last week, and they're taking material home, Jay Paul, and working in his garage in Long Beach and in the offices, allegedly for security of the Olympic Games, but secret from the major body of the investigative police in Los Angeles, the anti-terrorist group. Now, before I go on to part two of the article about the Klarsfields and the Nazi connections and what that article meant in opening up some more avenues, I want to say that just today, the Congress is having a hearing on the media access to being present when we invade a country or go to war. The Pentagon was put on the carpet for excluding all news media, literally for 5 days in Grenada. And that is the number one story of Grenada. There's a five-part story that I'm working on and broke it down into that many sections. But far and above everything else is the news media. And what this country needs, they should go one step further and maybe present a package to a congressman. Whenever there's a political assassination or the death of any person who's interested in politics, even if it's Lenny Bruce or Marilyn Monroe with a politician, people related to those people in office, every time there's a political assassination of a president, a congressman, a writer, somebody that is into politics in some way in the mainstream at the time they're killed, there should be a pool of people, and I might have mentioned this before, whose names are fixed like a lottery. And you, out of that pool, you bring in coroners and investigators from 50 states. You don't know who in advance, and you draw it publicly. And you get a team from 50 states to come to that city to see the body, to see the autopsy reports, doctors, coroners, lawyers, investigators, and the press, to go into a home. If a man is arrested, like Artie Bremer, for shooting Wallace, E. Howard Hunt shouldn't be in that home before anybody gets there, get a phone call to go over there. When Maurice Bishop was killed in Grenada, Michael Ledeen shouldn't be the person that's sent down there with Mr. Brown, a soldier of fortune, to rake out the papers of Maurice Bishop, because they can plant evidence to prove his intentions of working with the Soviet Union that that justifies the invasion. You have to have the media at the home when the door is opened. There should be people from around the country flown in who look at all the evidence. And then you wouldn't have those phony diaries, those planted diaries of Lee Oswald and Artie Bremmer and Sirhan. And everybody would have a chance to fingerprint the diaries, to fingerprint these alleged suicide notes and so forth. The press has to be at every battle scene, or else the battle is described only from the point of view of the people who went in. And that is not good enough at a time where we could have a military coup at any moment, and the excuse for taking over would be identical to Hitler's Reichstag. With that history, and with the same Nazis running the defense, intelligence, and the CIA, Hitler should not have been allowed to round up labor leaders, students, and so forth based upon a bomb falling into the building there as the excuse. Before any action is made by any executive, a lottery should be ready and pull in people to see who did it, see who the Carloses are that worked for the CIA and Samuel Cummings, see who the people are who caused that violence. If we don't have those laws in advance, you're going to wake up with a Reichstag operation, because these people are swift and they've been trained, and that commando landing in Grenada was exactly the kind of thing that they're doing with not the regular U.S. Army, but with the Rangers and the Special Forces. And the Special Forces also were set up by Adolf Hitler and Nazis that John McCloy released out of prison. Now, this is the year of the rat. An article in the paper today, former South Vietnamese President Ky was the center of attraction in L.A. It's the year of the rat. Ky also was a admirer Adolf Hitler, had posters about him. I had a poster about Ky during the war with quotations on his admiration of Adolf Hitler. He was celebrating the year of the rat. There was one article today on Henry Kissinger that his name was discovered on a list of terrorist targets. This is out of the Washington Post, February the 6th. That is disinformation, just as the story that Aja worked for the Bulgarian KGB is disinformation. They're claiming, Scotland Yard, that when the Israeli ambassador to London, Mr. Argoff, was killed June 3rd, 1982, that they had papers that are just coming to trial in February 84, 2 years later, that Kissinger was on a list. That is identical to Alexander Haig saying that his car was bombed on the military base when he was announcing he was running for president. Kissinger wants to be president of the United States. He wants to show that he's a victim of the terrorists, that he's being chased. There's no way. The way he's traveled and moved around with these people in and out of the Middle East, Israel, all over the world, where this Mr. Nidal is, Abu Nidal, there's no way that they knew for 2 years that his name was on the list. They keep his name in the news no matter what, and he will always be there. He's on a new commercial, I Love New York, Henry Kissinger. He's on the soap operas with Gerald Ford. He's visible everywhere, whether the terrorists are after him or whether you're supposed to see shows on Broadway. And big posters, you're going to see that ugly face until it's a president or the Führer of the United States. I don't believe that story, and I don't believe they had that information 2 years, and I'm sick and tired of Henry Kissinger. Now, Beate Clarsfield was down in Chile. She was arrested. It was kind of cheap, $8 fine, and she's out, but that's pretty good. She was with her rider, Peter Helmut, and she was protesting the fact that Chile keeps Nazi SS Colonel Walter Rauch down there in Chile. She's a spunky woman. And I want to continue part two about Ms. Clarsfield, and if I have time, bring it right up to what's happening now at Rebel, because there's an interesting connection here through all of these characters, and I want to get to that. I don't know if I'll have time, and I don't want to go too fast so that you miss the point, so we'll do as much as we can this week and then go on to it next week. I mentioned her role in slapping Mr. Carl Kissinger and accusing him of being a Nazi, which he was. At the German Congress, she was so furious that this top Nazi in charge of propaganda was back as Chancellor of Germany. She studied the children I mentioned before at this home, the orphans that were taken. And she investigated how they were murdered and sent to the concentration camp. The article was called The Woman Who Avenged the Children of Izu, I-Z-I-E-U. And she studied them. She studied how 312 top Nazi war criminals were out doing business, dealing drugs, selling weapons, and terror. And she traced Klaus Barbie. She had some pictures printed in France and Germany in newspapers in 1968 of Klaus Barbie, and she hoped that somebody would recognize him. He had changed his name, and she hoped that he would be recognized. There was a man in South America, Klaus Altman, A-L-T-M-A-N-N. A Lima, Peru businessman was in Munich, and he saw the picture. His name is Herbert John. And he saw the picture of Altman, and he recognized him from Lima, Peru, and knew that there was a German who looked just exactly like him at the home of a man named Fritz Schwend, S-C-H-W-E-N-D. So he had gotten a passport by the Red Cross. He was assisted by the Germans. They gave him she went to the German offices and found out that this same man that she wanted, Klaus Altman, had the same birthday as Klaus Barbie, the same first names. And so she flew down to Lima, Peru, and by the time she got there, Barbie had disappeared. And she took a woman with her, Ida Hollenbrenner. I might have mentioned her before. I-T-A was her first name, H-A-L-A-U-B-R-E-N-N-E-R. And her husband and family had been killed, her eldest son by the Nazis, and two children, daughters put in this particular orphanage, had been killed by the Nazis. And she took this woman, nearly 70 years old, down there to Bolivia to get Klaus Barbie and to find him. And the two women were chained with padlocks to the fence of Barbie's office. Now, this fellow mentioned that Barbie left, that he left Bolivia and was in Peru with a man named Fritz Schwend, his host. And in the article that was in Parade magazine, January 22nd, that's a magazine section that comes out in various newspapers, and it's in the Washington Post, if you want to look up in the library, she just casually mentioned that Mr. Fritz Schwend was employed by the Central Intelligence Agency, as was Walter Rauf, as was Klaus Barbie. And Schwend had important and she described as very important contacts, this fellow told her, in the United States. He had very high-level contacts in the United States. Now, David Emery up in Palo Alto, who does fantastic research and read the article, immediately called me. We read Aftermath often, and there are things to reread all the time in Aftermath, written by Ladislas Farrago. And in Aftermath, Farrago describes how the money from the Jews was taken when they were taken to the concentration camps, this tremendous wealth. They held on to their money, stones, precious stones worth millions, diamonds, diamond rings, valuables. And then at the end of the war, people were looking for the SS treasure and all this money that was hidden for the Nazis to use after the war. And in the process of looking for the money, they came to a man named Mr. Rajakowicz, R-A-J-A-K-O-W-I-T-S-C-H. And Rajakowicz was very close to Bishop Udall, H-U-D-A-L, who helped the Nazis with the Rat Line. That was the train that helped them leave from American custody down to the Vatican, and they supplied them with papers and lots of money to go to South America and start their business. And they wanted to know where Bishop Udall was getting the money. They had their shipping costs and so forth. And in the process of tracing Udall's money and the Underground Railroad, these people were housed and fed and then given travel documents and sent down with money from mysterious origin that the bishop couldn't account for. And they came to an office in Switzerland that was run, a financier, Freddie Mercer, M-E-R-S-E-R, who was a partner of Frederick Schwend, S-C-H-W-N-D. And Schwend, as I briefly mentioned last week, was in charge of Operation Bernhardt, which involved counterfeiting literally over $100 million, getting ready to fund Nazis when the war was over. And Bishop Udall, who ran the Rat Line, who helped Walter Rauf leave the country, and Klaus Barbie and hundreds of other people, was picking up the money in Switzerland, in a Swiss office, connected with Frederick Schwend, S-C-H-W-E-N-D. Now, in the great heroin coup, and David Emery also had his fingers right on this right away, that is the story of the people behind who killed John Kennedy, the drug running, the narcotic traffic, the Nazi network in South and Central America. In the great heroin coup on page 144, it tells about the Watergaters. E. Howard Hunt was working with a most intriguing conspirator named Bender, a German refugee whose true identity remains a matter of speculation. Some contend that he has been an agent of the West German Gehlen Espionage Network. This is E. Howard Hunt of Watergate, working with Bernard Barker and Frank Sturgis, worked in the CIA with a man from the Gehlen Espionage Group whose name was Bender. Then it goes on to say the former security chief of the Dominican Republic, for Trujillo, claims that Bender was Fritz Schwend, a Gehlen collaborator and leader of the Nazis in Peru, so that this Nazi could have Swiss bank accounts, have the Operation Bernhard with the money for the Nazis to leave, with the help of the CIA from Germany, and this is where Henry Kissinger was with them when it was the OSS, put them on the boats to South America, and then meet them and work overthrowing one by one the death squads and the military dictatorships that were put into power in South and Central America. Now, the Great Heroin Coup refers to Fritz Schwend, the Gehlen agent. Prior to the Bay of Pigs, Schwend was allegedly the CIA's man in the Dominican Republic. He used the name Don Frederico. He worked with mobster Frank Costello and ex-Cuban dictator Batista, and also involved in their operations was Claire Chennault's Flying Tigers, and I mention that because Chennault is on the board of 20th Century Fox with Mark Rich and Henry Kissinger and Gerald Ford and the people who were part of the conspiracy or part of the cover-up. Now, in this book, The Great Heroin Coup, it says that one of Santo Traficante's personal CIA contacts for the Bay of Pigs was Frank Farino, that's Frank Sturgis, Castro's liquidator of mob casinos, and he identifies him also as Frank Sturgis, that's one of the Watergate defendants, who ran the Miami-based International Anti-Communist Brigade. Another detail from Sturgis's past, now we go over to Frank Sturgis again in Watergate, is especially interesting in light of Frank Bender, alleges ties to the Gehlen organization. Frank Sturgis lived in Berlin as a courier between the nation's intelligence agencies and would be in contact with the Gehlen network. And they have Frank Sturgis and also is Bernard Barker working with Bender, who is Schwend from Peru, who was up in Switzerland with the money to give the Nazis to leave by way of the Vatican down to South America. Another reference in the Great Heroin Coup talks about the Double Check organization that worked with these people. In my article in The Rebel, I have a lot on the Nazis and the JFK Kennedy assassination and how after 1950, 52, they all started to get together. This is the team I was talking about, and incidentally, there's a reference here of these people working together down with the Bay of Pigs and Dominican Republic, the operation and the coup there. And the man in charge of the CIA then was Ray S. Klein, in charge of Georgetown's propaganda mill with Michael Ledeen. Michael Ledeen is the propagandist of the Bulgarian plot to try to kill the Pope. Again, he was at Maurice Bishop's offices just 2 months ago in October down in Grenada. The CIA, Ray Klein, Ledeen, and Fritz Schwend, the money man for these operations coming out of Peru. Now, J. Peter Grace, who I began the program talking about, ran Peru, ran it for the Nazis, ran it for the CIA. In fact, I mentioned in the Rebel article on the JFK assassination that Oswald's money man, the guy who got him the job at the book depository by way of Ruth Payne or at the printers with the security clearances, George de Morenschild, who was his Defense Department CIA control agent, went down to Peru and worked with the Grace family and also with Klaus Barbie down in South America and traveled the same route. And now we take it one step further from John Kennedy up to Watergate. Now, taking this information about the Klarsfelds and Mr. Schwinn being the operator with the Bay of Pigs people, I go back now 2 years earlier before Farragut's book came out. In 1972, I wrote Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped? And that article was about the Watergate people, the men arrested at the Watergate Hotel, and their links to the Reinhardt-Gehlen operation and the network of the Nazis around the world. And then the third section of that article is how Nixon really came to power, bringing these Nazis together. Now, here we have Richard Nixon at Watergate working with Hunt and Liddy, paid by the White House, and with Mr. Schwinn working with them, top Nazi. And there were other top Nazis besides Nikolai Meloxa that I wrote about, going through Nixon's office down to Argentina and involved with various parts of the assassination puzzle. In my Martha Mitchell article in 1972, I was describing Bernard Barker, and keep in mind that the burglary happened June the 17th, and within 3 weeks, I had this article prepared for Paul Krasner, and we had it published by August. I described Bernard Barker, alias Frank Carter. Barker worked closely together with Hunt, with E. Howard Hunt, planning the Bay of Pigs invasion. He was the conduit of funds for the Central Intelligence Agency, the payment for the recruits of the Bay of Pigs. He worked with Frank Bender of the CIA. I knew that was important, although Bender has never been identified in any Watergate books. There's about 100 of them. I own most of them, I think. Bender is not identified. Now, if Bender is Fritz Schwinn, and he paid for the money for hundreds of Nazis to go out of the CIA and American custody down to South America and to Egypt, into Israel, into Palestine, into the all over the Mediterranean and South America. I knew that Frank Bender was important, but I didn't know that until the Great Heroin Coup came out that he was the same man working with the CIA who now has been identified by the Klarsfelds as protecting Klaus Barbie when she wanted him extradited, and protecting him in Peru, because that is the base of the W.R. Grace and Company down there in Peru. Now, I can do a lot of references in the book Aftermath. They refer to Mr. Schwinn, Frederick Schwinn, in about 20 different places. And I don't have to go into those in detail. You can get that book. Most of you will pick it up at the library or used bookstore. On broadcast number 437, this was in 1980, 4 years ago, I talked about Frederick Schwinn. He passed away. He lived in Lima, Peru. He was former Nazi Major Frederick Schwinn, who printed counterfeit money and dollars to ruin the economy of Britain and the United States. And then I referred to one reference in Aftermath that he was in drug pushing. He was the key man of Operation Bernhardt, counterfeit money with notes from the Bank of England and so forth. And he was involved with complex schemes, only $100 million in counterfeit notes. And the network, as I say, of Skorzeny with Evita Peron and Klaus Barbie, I detailed quite a bit in the Rebel magazine, November 1983, that goes into those Nazi connections. Now, one thing that has to do with Larry Flint and the Schwinn connections, and then I'll go more to Larry Flint on the second half of the say of this program. I was talking to some people at Rebel because I'm very anxious to have that that stuff that he had, supposed to be vitamins or health food, this great chemical mix. It's made up at Klamath Falls, that blue-green manna. I wanted a laboratory to check that out. I don't have the money to find out if Larry Flint had been poisoned, and the people in the family, there were chemicals in there that could alter their behavior or their mind. And I was told by somebody down there that a fellow in the office by the name of Bruce Oliver was looking into this and had found out that, in fact, this stuff was damaging. Now, I'm not saying it is. I don't want to be sued by the guy up at Casey Laboratories. I'm just interested in whether or not it is. I'm not saying it is. So I was talking on the phone to this guy, and his name is Bruce Oliver. And we were talking, and he's going back to Washington. He lived in Larry Flynt's house for a month, and then he evidently was kicked out of the house, and he hangs around the rebel office. I don't know in what capacity. It's none of my business. But he was talking to me on the phone, and we were saying what a tough time Larry had. He had just gotten a 15-month sentence, and he obviously was out of his head and shouldn't have gotten anything until his head was clear and he could act in court appropriate to what was happening. He's still disturbed coming out of that Springfield, Missouri federal pen. You can imagine what was going on there. So Oliver gave me his phone number in Washington, D.C. That's his home base. It was a toll-free number, 800 number. And I said, well, you must be pretty important to have a toll-free number. So he volunteered that his father is Robert Oliver. And I said, you're kidding. Robert Oliver, here in the rebel office, I'm talking to Bruce Oliver. We'll take a one-minute break now, and then in case you don't know the story of the Olivers, and if you want to run for 1 minute and look up your Watergate books index, otherwise I'll tell you about that in 1 minute. We'll take a one-minute break and get back to the Olivers.